here today. We start a new series, and I know Pastor Jonathan just gave you the ooh-wee, so I don't have to give you that. You already got that, so that's out of the way. Today's series that we're going to starting together is really more like a equipping. It's more like a training than it is inspiration. Personally, it's going to be some hands-on how-tos. I hope you like hands-on how-tos. It's practical. We're going to kind of study together who Jesus is in terms of how he reached the world. If you are not, you don't necessarily consider yourself a Christian, if you're here with us today or you're watching in from online, we're so glad to have you watching in. You're going to get to see this. You're going to get to see up close and personal in the Gospels that Jesus is seeking you. He is seeking you. He came specifically for you. He's in pursuit of you. And he does that through sending his disciples. So there is no hidden agenda with Jesus. He's not baiting and switching. He's not trying to make you feel good, but really he wants to ensnare you in lifelong sacrifice. Not how it works. Jesus was very, very clear. There's a reason why I'm here. And I'm going to help you understand, if you're a follower, one of my disciples, what to do. And is there a more interest? Is there more urgency? Has there ever been in your lifetime, maybe there has, more urgency as to what in the world Christians are supposed to be doing? When you think about how conflicted our world has become openly, how confusing it is. Pastor Yon and I did a podcast episode on truth, and here was the big question: what's even true? How do we even know what's true? So it's one thing to believe the truth, it's a whole other thing to even discover what is the truth. And that means there's a lot of confusion. And people are at each other's throats. It's chaotic culturally, it's chaotic politically, it's chaotic, no doubt, in our culture wars. And many of you, many of us, feel like it's time for us to do something. It's not panic time, right? Serious Christians aren't in a panic, but we feel like it's time to do something. It's got to take action. No time to sit around and watch. I want to be a part of doing something that helps change the world or helps make a dent, that helps steer us back on course. How do I even reach, with my limited voice, how do I reach the masses that are clearly off the rails? And so the question that we're going to kind of answer for the next several weeks is, what in the world are Christians doing? What should they be doing? If we can't do everything, what is something that we can do? Are we really supposed to be protesting bad policies in our government? Are we supposed to be getting louder, turning up the volume, making sure that there are people who know how these bad policies are ruining our culture, our country? Are we supposed to be ringing the phone of our representatives off the hook? Are we supposed to be signing petitions, answering robocalls? Should we post more boldly on social media? Maybe that's it. Some of you have gone that way probably, right? I'm just going to get bolder on social media, make sure everybody knows. Maybe I just got to get more persuasive, more emphatic, more urgent, make sure people are aware of who's ruining the country. Maybe some of you are like, Pastor, I've lost hope, really, in those things. I'm not doing that. I'm not protesting. I'm not publicly posting things on social media. Here's what I've decided to do. I've bailed. I'm not following along. I'm praying for a miracle. I am in my prayer closet, and I am praying for a miracle. Well, there is a strategy to change the world. There is a strategy that's a world-changing strategy. And I don't hope to inspire you today. I hope to kind of instruct you today and put some tools in your hand in terms of the way you think, maybe some equipping and some training that answers this question: is there a strategy to change the world? Now, some people have said recently, the strategy is for pastors to be more fearless on the platform. That's the strategy. We need fearless church leaders on the platform pushing back on all of these bad policies. And instead, we're getting pastors who are afraid and weak. They don't want to offend people. They don't want to hurt people's feelings. They need to be more bold, calling out evil and making sure that there is this distinction between good and evil, and they really aren't doing anything to push back against abortion or even white supremacy or whatever. So that's some of the ideas of the Christian church, is that pastors need to be the kind of the tip of the spear in confronting some of the things that are wrong with the world. And no doubt there's a place for that, right? No doubt there's a place for that. Is that the strategy? Is that what we're supposed to be doing? Is that what Christians are supposed to be doing? Are we supposed to be inventing new programs, compassion programs that serve those who are in need, evangelism outreaches? Are we supposed to be generating more programs for kids and youth, adoption, foster care, missions, et cetera, all those things helpful, necessary? Is that our strategy? Is that what we're aiming to do? And so many are confused about the strategy of the church. And in our concern to kind of do something, you'll notice that churches, you may have noticed that churches will launch programs in every direction all the time. And I'm watching more and more preachers and prophets get bolder and more blunt and calling out the things that need to happen and who's to blame. More and more calling Christians to action. Here's the warning. Here's what I want to kind of preface this with a warning that more activity, and you've already noticed this, right? More activity and more busyness doesn't necessarily mean more effective. Have you noticed that? In all of your life, have you noticed that you may be busier than you've ever been and accomplishing less than you've ever accomplished? You ever feel that way? I think there's a phrase for that, a hamster wheel. Busy, 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 busy. You get out of the hamster wheel and you're like, I didn't go nowhere. Same. I'm same. So churches that have a strategy that increase activity and increased busyness, it doesn't always mean you're actually doing the very thing that Jesus has sent us to do. It's not the same thing. Activity, busyness, not the same as accomplishing the strategy that changes the world. The strategy that Jesus has in mind, that he handed off to the disciples. And this is super important. We don't have to guess what that strategy is. I'm so grateful for so many reasons. I'm so grateful for a Bible that describes who God is and what his intentions are. I'm also glad and grateful that God doesn't ask us to go figure it out on our own. Can you imagine doing a Google search? What's the strategy of the church to reach the world? Can you even imagine that? Let's start with link one. Link two, link three, never mind, too confusing, right? But he doesn't make us guess. In fact, he helps us very specifically grasp with just three simple questions, we get to filter all of our passions out. And we ought to be taking our cues from Jesus, and this is going to help us. He reveals the plan for changing the world. And when we focus on this, we'll notice that this basic philosophy is so different from the modern church that it's revolutionary. It changes everything. It changes really the whole DNA from the inside out. And we have to filter our passions through three questions to get there. And basically, they look like this. What is the mandate he gave his followers? What did Jesus actually say? This is the most important thing to do. We talked a couple of months ago about, is there a specific thing that God wants me to do? Well, no, but yes. No, not for you specifically, necessarily, sometimes, but often generally, no, not something specifically. But for all of us, yes. For all believers, there is a mandate that he gave his followers. Well, what is it? Secondly, and we really have to step back to see this, what was the strategy he employed to make disciples? Did Jesus just make disciples haphazardly, or did he have a strategy? And thirdly, how can we apply Jesus' disciple-making methods to our own lives? So those three questions that we press our kind of our outlook, and how do we change the world? Is there a mandate? Is there a strategy that was handed off? And then how do we apply these things to our lives? Do you know that the church universally agrees on the mandate? Did you know that? They agree on the mission. Nobody will say, no, very, I don't know anyone who would disagree that the mission is make disciples. But the methods have generated denominations, factions, splinter groups, all kinds of new books and careers and bloggers and you name it, and it has to do with the disagreement, great disagreement about the methods. So what method should we use? What strategy do we employ? Let's look to Jesus and see what he tells us, because it's specific. Here's what he says. He's teaching his disciples. Basically, he's saying to his disciples, so I'm not going to be here forever. In fact, by my calculations, it's pretty soon. I'm not going to be here. But when I'm not here, I'm going to leave you something to do. And I pray. He does this in John chapter 17. He prays for unity, and that's how he wants them to do it, the way in which he wants them to do it. But this is what exactly he wants them to do. Go make disciples. Pretty simple. Baptize the nations, teach them to obey, and that's it. Pretty simple. Mostly, the church around the world agrees with this. That's the mandate. That's the mission. What we don't necessarily agree on is how do we do it? So here's the main idea today. By implementing the methods of Jesus, his church will be better equipped to carry out his mandate of making disciples. By implementing the methods, what are Jesus's methods? He did not say to the church, make sure you do the most popular methods. If everybody's doing this method, do that method. Clearly, Jesus didn't intend for us to study what has been most recently successful and do that. I mean, there's wisdom in strategic thinking, but it's not his mandate. He didn't say, make sure that everybody live streams. You want your church live streaming, right? Doesn't hurt to have that tool in your toolbox, but we're going to implement the methods of Jesus, because if you don't have, do you know that before live stream, churches were still accomplishing the mission, right? They weren't like, you know what we need? We need something that hasn't arrived yet. And then when live stream shows up, bam, helpful tool. But here's the main method. Jesus sought to reach the masses by making a relatively small number of disciples who in turn went out and made disciples. So his method is clear. His mandate is clear. And the method is this: reach everyone by reaching a few. You wanna make a difference in the world, you're gonna be focusing on, you in fact aren't gonna be focusing on the world. This is how we put it here in our church family. Our mission comes out of this passage. It's the mission that Jesus gave all disciples who we are: worship and make disciples and obey, to make reproducing disciples in a multiplying church. Pretty simple. So let's talk about some principles here that are going to kind of guide us. These are the basic principles that are going to guide our efforts that we hopefully start to upgrade in our lives, improve, engage in. Some people are going to hear by this. Hopefully the Holy Spirit's going to kind of inspire you to engage. For others, it's going to be like, oh yeah, I've been going along, but I'm going to put my hands back on the wheel. For others, your hand's been on the wheel, but maybe the Holy Spirit's going to inspire you to get your foot off the brake and put the pedal to the metal. Isn't that what all the kids are saying? No? No. In the 50s, they were. So, here it is. Number one, like Jesus, order your short life around your God-given purpose and mission. Order your life. What did Jesus tell everyone his mission and purpose was? He was clear. Look what he said. For the Son of Man came, here's his mission and purpose, to seek and save the lost. That's why Jesus arrived. There was so much love for lost people that he arrived seeking them and saving them. And when other people said, Jesus, I want you to do this. I want you to devote yourself to this. Come over and help us. We want you to kind of flip Rome and take over politically, bring us back to power in government and politics so there's no more oppression in our city of Jerusalem and in our nation. Here's what Jesus said. Well, I didn't come to do that. Instead, the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. He's looking for people far from God, and he's pursuing them, and he himself has devoted himself. He has wrapped his entire life. He was sent and motivated and completely devoted. Nothing was haphazard about his focus. Nothing got in his way. He wasn't distracted or deterred. This is the only thing that was driving his life. He was laser focused on this mission, and everything was wrapped around it. It doesn't mean this is the only thing he did. This means the only thing that he was trying to accomplish. And everything he did was driven by this calculated strategy, almost like a war general who says, we've got a specific plan and we're going to stick to it. Not because the future of the nation or his people was on the line, but because souls, eternal destiny of souls was on the line. That's why. That's why he was so devoted to this. And I want you to look closely here. Jesus doesn't say that his purpose was to deliver or to deliver his people from the evil political powers in Rome. He didn't say his purpose was to replace government officials with his disciples. He didn't say that he was kind of here to root out pagan curriculum and replace it with Bible-based curriculum. Nothing wrong with any of that. It's not why he came. He had something more specific in mind. And it wasn't confronting political extremists. Instead, he said, it's lost people. I'm after them. That's why I exist. That's why I have incarnated in the flesh, because the Father has sent me to reach people that are far from him. And he was laser focused on that. Now we, his disciples, could say, well, that's Jesus's focus, and now there's so much more to be concerned about. So much more really to devote ourselves to. Look what Jesus said. And again, Jesus said to his disciples, as the Father has sent me, I need your help on this yellow part. As the Father has sent me, so I am sending you. Let's stop there. I don't want to miss this. In the same way the Father sent me, for what purpose? Seek and save lost people. I'm now sending you. Go make disciples. Live on mission. Live with God-given purpose. And later on, he's going to say, don't do this without the inspiration and the power of the Holy Spirit. We'll get to that later. But this is what he does. Don't be Jesus is like, listen, you're going to be distracted by building your career. You're going to be distracted by raising successful kids, trying to raise successful, socioeconomically successful kids. You're going to be distracted by trying to prove yourself to your parents for their approval for the rest of your life. You're going to be distracted by that. You're going to be distracted by bigger and better and more. You're going to be distracted by finishing your degree. But Christian, believer, those of you who belong to Jesus, this is your mission. While you are doing all those other things I just mentioned, while you're doing those, make disciples while you're doing all those things. Seek and save the lost. So here's another principle for guiding our disciple-making efforts. And really, this is a careful study of Jesus's specific strategy. And it reveals here a couple of other specific things that are going to decide, kind of guide our efforts here. Like Jesus, find and focus on a few people. There's been a couple of moments where I've been surrounded by people. One of them that's coming to my mind is the State Fair. Anybody remember the State Fair? You remember that? Who remembers the smells? That's what I mean. Some people are like, that's why I don't go to the fair, the smells. I can smell the fair on my front steps. I live over in that part of town, and when the breeze is blowing right, I can smell pizza frites. I think that's what it is. I hope that's what it is. I don't know. Could be lots of stuff, I guess. So, do you know, when I'm at the fair, I have these thoughts. Like, wouldn't it be cool to reach all these people? I know you guys don't think like that, right? You're like, wouldn't it be cool if I could eat all this food at the same time? Sometimes I have this thought, like, what would it take? Like, when you're in the midway, back in the day, when you're shoulder to shoulder and front to back and back to front, and it's 96 degrees out, and you're smelling sausage sandwiches. Here's what I'm wondering. like, what would it take? What, like, if God were to appear himself, almost like a Saul experience, right? If Jesus were to appear and he were to address, just kind of like a hovery, crack the sky kind of a thing, and he were to say something, would that do it? If we had some way of loudspeakering, just sometimes I just wonder, what would it take to reach everybody? I'm so relieved to discover that Jesus, in his mandate and in his mission, when you think about his methods, never intended for us to do strategic thinking on how to reach all those people at the same time. Our job isn't to reach the masses. Instead, even we should pay attention to this. Even Jesus wasn't trying to reach the masses. He invested his short life finding and focusing on just a few people. Look at this. Look what he does. This is in Luke. At daybreak, Jesus called together all of his disciples. It's possible that some of you are, when you read this, you're kind of like, huh, I'm not sure I knew that. He called together all of his disciples. Did you know this? And then he picked from among them, after praying for the night before, he selected from among them 12. I mean, I can't stop thinking of like recess in sixth grade dodgeball, right? Got a couple of people and they're just picking. I don't want him. Last. And it's like, I'll take 12. And Jesus calls all of his disciples together and then he shows 12. Now, wouldn't you think if you're trying to reach the world, you're kind of like, I'm not going to pick 12. I'm going to pick them all. I'm going to pick them all. I'm going to try to reach the entire world, by the way, forever, for all of history, now and forever. I'm going to reach the world. I'm going to have to get everybody inspired. It's not what he did. Check out what he did. He chose 12 to be the apostles, to start with 12. He was focused on and he was looking for setting aside fewer than he was focused on and trying to reach more. He started with less. And as the number of his followers increased, he was reducing the number to be more effective. Some of you own businesses and you have tried to do, maybe when you started your business, everybody was a direct report to you. Then eventually you got big enough and you discovered that has not been very helpful. I can't be the direct report for everybody. So you have to choose from among you a few and really help them catch up to speed to be effective, to reduce the number so that is a more manageable number to train and equip. And you know, Jesus wasn't setting aside these apostles, these 12, do you know they weren't the top of the class? And how do we know that? Because some of them were in the trades. And by the way, if you were in the trades in Jesus' culture and you were in any way associated with Judaism or you were Hebrew, or do you know that all the best and brightest when they were young, they got called out of the public to follow the rabbi and to work in the synagogue? That was the top of the class. The ones who were most devoted to Judaism, the ones who were most devoted to the Old Testament Torah, the ones who were the most astute spiritually and theologically were set aside by rabbis and they become the disciples of the rabbis. You know who's left? You know who's left over after that? The bottom of the class, the 12. So if you were selected here by Jesus, you were not extraordinary, you were ordinary. He also picked teachable disciples. Disciple, by the way, meaning learner. He had to find 12 who were willing to learn and those who were hungry. They were picking out hungry people, those who wanted more out of their life than just to fish for fish. And Jesus said, if you're willing, I'll teach you to fish for people, human beings. So we have these ordinary, teachable, hungry people that he selected. And by the way, there's another passage where Jesus reduces the crowd. The crowds are getting huge. He's feeding the people. They're starting to follow him from place to place. And eventually Jesus is like, okay, it's time. I've got something to tell you. Unless you're willing to eat my flesh and drink my blood, you can't really remain in me. You can't be one of my disciples. And people are like, what did he just say? I'm not eating no flesh and drinking no blood. And what happened? They left. Didn't Jesus know that he was going to make people leave? Didn't Jesus know ahead of time that if you start saying crazy stuff like that, you're going to have a lot of empty seats in the auditorium? But what does he say? He's saying, I want you to know what's required to be one of my disciples. And then eventually he turns to his disciples, the 12, and he says, are you all leaving too? And they're like, well, Peter's like, well, I mean, we don't even know where we would go. Who else has the words of life? In other words, it's us, and we're with you, and we're not leaving you. So again, instead of Jesus saying, hey, everyone, I want you to look across and see the sea of people. If you feed them, right, if you feed them fish and you feed them loaves and you do miracles and you start healing their kids, you know what's going to happen? They're going to show up. Jesus doesn't do that. Again, he goes back. Does he want to reach people? Of course he does. Does he spend time reaching people? Of course he does. But when you're visualizing your mission, be careful to acknowledge that for Jesus, there was a rapidly diminishing amount of time spent on the masses and more time spent with a few. Surely the Son of God and the Creator of the universe could have done something spectacular to capture their attention, all the masses, right? You would think that if Jesus needed to, he could hologram himself in every corner of the world and reach the masses, but he didn't because he trusts this method here. He grabs a core of people and he uses a core of people. He devotes himself to a core of people and then those people reach the world. I heard it said one time, Jesus never intended to reach the world with his ministry. He always intended to reach the world with his ministers, those who were close to him. And he devotes himself to just a few people. And this is a genius strategy. So if you're trying to reach everybody, if you're trying to put everybody on blast, if you've got your mind on your entire family, like the whole year you wait for your family reunion and you're thinking, now's the time, I'm going to drop the hammer. Here we go. I hope they're ready. Group text, here it comes. If you're focused on the entire marketplace that you're in, if you're focused on every coworker that you're in, if you're focused on every single teammate, every classmate in your graduating class, I want to caution you, that's not Jesus' style. Jesus was focused on, and he was finding just a few that he could put his arms around, and he could put his eyes on, and he could put his hands in their hands, and he could live life side by side with them. This is why in our North Central Church family, we don't make a big deal out of who raised their hand to make a decision to follow Christ. We're trying to focus on people who need to be discipled. They get water baptized and you come around them and you don't just concern yourself with raise your hand decisions. You are looking for people that you can help learn how to lose your own life disciple. You know how many hands, if you said, hey, I want to just take a minute, God's at work in you, how many of you would like to lose your life to become a disciple? People are like, no thanks. Instead, decisions are easy. So we're focusing, finding and focusing on a few. So here's another principle that I want you to see. This is important. Secondly and lastly, like Jesus, share your everyday rhythm. So you're finding and you're focusing on a few people. Then what do? You're literally just sharing your everyday rhythms. What are rhythms? Things you do all the time. Things you don't think about doing. You're sharing it. You're bringing someone in and bringing someone along. You can actually think of it as a language, right? Think of this as a language. By the way, have you ever heard this? Discipleship is caught, not taught. Now, some of you who are in any kind of teaching, education, maybe you are a leader in your workspace or whatever, you already know that the best way to hand things off isn't necessarily to teach people. They catch it, right? And we see this when our first grader comes home and they start using a curse word and the parent's like, whoa, what? Where did you learn that? Where did you learn that? Right? Clearly, it wasn't in a classroom. They picked it up from somebody, dad. And it was caught. It's caught. This is how discipleship works. No one taught them that word. They just caught it. They picked it up along the way. So, having selected a small group of men, Jesus just starts sharing his ordinary rhythms, right? He calls them and he says, spend time with me. He says, travel around with me, share meals with me, watch me, listen to me. This is what Jesus is telling his disciples. This is what's happening. He doesn't have a curriculum. There is no formal schooling. It's association, not assimilation. He opens up the doors of his life. They take walks together around lonely roads. They visit together, crowded cities. They are taking naps together, sailing and fishing together in the Sea of Galilee. They're praying together in places that nobody really knows where they are. They're worshiping together in synagogues and in the temple. Regular day stuff that you would do in the ancient culture, they're doing that together. And by the way, even when Jesus was ministering to the masses, his disciples were right there with him, catching it. They were hearing him rebuke Pharisees, the self-righteous Pharisees. They were listening in when he caught maybe someone who was a lonely beggar on the street, and they caught the conversation that Jesus initiated. When Jesus was teaching the multitudes his profound view of God, the worldview, and they were listening in, and the disciples were close at hand to observe, and they were close at hand to listen to how that was going. So the essence of his training program, was just letting disciples follow him around. Do you know why your kids turned out just like you? Because they just followed you around. Right? Some of you were like, I'm so proud. Some of you were like, how did that happen? How? Why does that happen? All right, how many of you have, this is fascinating, but you've been out somewhere and you meet someone who knows your parent, and after a few minutes, they're like, you know what? You are just like your parent. It's not a classroom. You didn't learn, okay, what gestures to make. You caught it. You became like, quote unquote, the master. Letting Jesus let his disciples follow him around everywhere. Do you know that Paul, in the book of Thessalonians, he's trying to express how much he loved the church at Thessalonica. And you know what he says? He says, we were very careful when we were with you. We delighted in you. We loved you so much that we were thrilled not just to share with you the good news of the gospel, but we were thrilled to share our lives with you as an expression of our love. In other words, we don't just have a message for you, we have a life to share with you, and we shared our lives with you. And that's how he expressed his affection. And this principle will be difficult to embrace. It was difficult to embrace this principle that Paul and this principle that Jesus lived. It's difficult to embrace because it requires more time. It requires more of our own time. And it requires, they had very little time for themselves because they were constantly spending time with their disciples. When you think about how many hours a week someone spends in church or in classrooms or Bible studies or small groups, what is it, a couple hours a week, maybe? And then in between the couple hours a week, everybody spends all their time doing everything else. And we cannot rely on a couple hours a week for people to learn how to follow Jesus. Instead, those are some kind of some high-arching, maybe some of what we're doing here today, inspiration for people. But the real absorption, the real traction that people get, they get when they're spending time. You think about a young believer who's a new believer. They're not going to grow the way that the disciples grew if they're spending a couple hours a week in classroom settings, filling in blanks and being assimilated. They have to literally be put together with a new friend who believes and belongs to Jesus. And that person just shares their rhythms with them. They're not perfect, right? They're not sharing their perfection. They're sharing their walk, their devotion. They're sharing what they've already learned as it relates to growing in their own faith. But we want to schedule things, right? We want to plan things. We want to get the program lined up. We want the sign-up sheets. We want the lessons, the platform teaching. We want the classroom teaching, the fill in the blanks. But instead, prioritize getting someone in your rhythms. If you fix things, bring people along to fix things with you. If you cook things, bring people along to cook things with you. If you eat things, bring people along to eat things with you. If you do this the way that Jesus did this, a lot more of this begins to happen at kitchen tables, living rooms, over coffee, and bedtime stories, and minivan trips. How many of you wish that your kids didn't learn what they learned from you while you were driving a minivan on a trip, right? You're like, just going to shut it off for a minute. But Jesus has this deliberate strategy, and the deliberate strategy is to share his. Now, this is literally how I learned to deal with kids in any way. I live with Raquel. Raquel is a gifted kids person, and I did not learn to love and teach and lead kids because she signed me up for her master's class online. She didn't provide for me a fill-in-the-blank manual, and a couple times a week we got around the kitchen table, and she said, "Now I want you to turn to page 26. Now, I'm not saying those things are bad, but here's what's true. I learned to love and teach and care for kids because I spent my life alongside someone who knows how to love, care, and teach kids. My son Caleb's learning to bake. She didn't have a baking class in my house. She said, "Boy, get in the kitchen. It's how it went. I'm going to show you something." Starts to like it and starts to say, "Ma, how do I? When do I? What does it look like if? What if I did this? What if this went here and that went there? And what if I remember to turn the oven off?" I mean, imagine how inspiring that is. And he is a baker because his mom shared baking. How many of you can do something because somebody brought you in? Seriously. How many of you can do something because someone brought you in and shared it with you? It's the same. It's the same with our faith. Bring them in. Listen, I love when you send me people who are new to faith, who you've been praying for. I love when you send them to me and you give them my cell phone number. I don't mind that one bit. But you know what I do with them? I say, "Go back. Go back. We love you and we're going to do the best that we can to support you and to serve you and get to know who you are. But go back. Follow your friend. Spend time with your friend. Ask your friend what book to read. If they have any time for coffee, I just send them back because that's Jesus' model, is fewer. It's sharing life on life. That's how it works. That's how people pick it up. And if not, these newish believers eventually, they fall away. And they don't fall away because the church has bad programs. They fall away because there isn't a person who's sharing the rhythms of their life with them. That's why they fall away in some cases. In some cases, not only the programs are bad, but the people are bad, right? So sometimes that's a real thing. So we have to be careful that we don't rely on Sunday services. We don't rely on only Bible studies and only classroom settings. Cannot rely on that. Instead, we have to go beyond. We focus beyond all that, in between. We like to say it this way: you grow on your own in between Sundays. What does that mean? I'm feeding myself and I'm sharing my life rhythms with other people. And if our numbers is, if our emphasis or our focus is on numbers and our focus is on whatever our financial income and giving is, if our focus is on the crowds and who raised their hand in decisions, we're going to miss Jesus's method. We're going to miss his strategy. By the way, Jesus sought to reach the masses. How did he do it? What was his method? A relatively small number of disciples who in turn went out and also made disciples, right? Also made disciples of all people. So listen, when you're watching TV or you're walking through the fair, if we ever get to do that again, you're watching TV and you think to yourself, "I wish somebody would just say something to those people. I wish they would read this email that I'm getting ready to send. I wish they would pick up the phone in my representative's office." And again, I'm saying there's nothing wrong with all of that, but that's not necessarily the method of changing the world. The method of changing the world and changing the people that you see on TV, the people who are on your campus, the people who are in your athletic program, who are in your graduating class. Focus on the few, listen, who God has brought around you. Focus on the few who God has brought, miraculously, providentially has brought around you. Could be a spouse, your kids, your kids' friends, a couple of close coworkers. Consider these things prayerfully. Who has God put you around? They're just, and probably you're looking for ordinary, teachable, hungry person. That's it. Ordinary, teachable, hungry person who's asking questions about what's really important in life. Hey, I've been Googling things and buying books. I'm trying to learn some stuff, and these people slowly become candidates. And by the way, if you're one of those people, I want you to know, if you're not yet belonging to Jesus, your Christian friends have an agenda. The agenda is not to convert you. The agenda is to love you. How do they do that? They love you so much, they share that which has transformed their own lives. We focus on the few who God's brought around you, know their names, pray for them, prioritize your time, and don't forget, laser focus on what we're all here for. And be careful that you're not devoting to yourself to something as a disciple of Jesus that Jesus didn't devote himself to. Be careful you're not focusing on something that Jesus himself, your master, didn't focus on and devote himself to. Be alert and be aware and invite these people in to share your everyday rhythms.